G'day, I'm Rob.
And I'm Dave.
And you're listening to Dave's Big Day Out 2, which is a follow-on from last year, almost a year ago. I think it was May, Dave, where we did Dave's Big Day Out, where you came up to Sydney to see Sophie Aldred. We've also done episodes like this in the past, like when Dave met Chris, when you met Chris Eccleston. It's been a whole sort of over the years from time to time when you've gone out and done something interesting. We've done an episode like this. I'm really building it up, Dave, because you've done something very cool today at Supernova. What did you do?
I met the 13th Doctor herself, Jodie Whittaker.
Very nice. Yes, Jodie Whittaker is in Australia for the Supernova Expos. Obviously, it happened in Melbourne earlier today. Dave, you've been posting pictures from the event and so on, but I'm here to pick your brain about it. And I guess the first question is, what inspired you to do this? Because I know Whittaker isn't your favourite doctor. I mean, for our newer listeners, you're certainly not I don't like Whittaker, you know, hashtag not my doctor. You're not one of those people by any means, but she's not up the top. So what inspired you to go and see Whittaker today with a million other people?
It was a lot of other people. Look, I did and ah about this one when it was announced towards the end of last year that Jodie was coming out. I did sort of think, am I going to go and what am I going to pay? And I was paying for a holiday at the time. So I thought, it's a decision that can wait until the new year when the credit card is paid off.
Yes.
And then I just thought, you know what? It's one of those things. If I don't go and see her, I'm going to regret it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was she was affordable. I mean, this is a professional con and they do charge money. And I'll talk a bit more about the ticket format in a moment. So it was a bit of money, but it wasn't insane amounts of money for Jodie, mm-hmm. which definitely made it accessible. But I do remember after I'd seen McGann and Davo in Melbourne quite a few years ago now, and I thought, right, I've met and got autographs from Doctors 5, 6, 7, 8, and being a little bit sort of wistful that that's probably all I'm going to get because 1 to 3 are dead, Tom's not making it out to Australia again, and I thought the new series Doctors were just going to be insanely in demand and very expensive and just not going to come out to Australia. But
yeah, sort of far away and untouchable, really.
Yeah, they really did feel like that. But since then, I've met Eccleston, I've met Capaldi, and now I've met Jodie. So I have now met and got autographs from 7 of the 14 Doctors, which is 50%, and that's surely a pass mark.
I think it is. Now, I first knew you were doing this just a few days back when you mentioned, oh, yeah, I'm going to go and see Jodie. I had not realised this was happening at all because it's not happening in my hometown, etc. I think the other leg of this tour was Brisbane, possibly?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so it wasn't in my town. So I was kind of like surprised that this was happening at all. And then this morning you're posting from the line and saying, look, I'm in the line, and you were holding up your phone. There's a slightly bewildered girl next to you and some other people. And then behind them, just like what seems to be thousands of people. I think you said there was like seven lines or something at that point.
At that point, so it was about 10:15 and Jodie was coming on to do her autographs at 11.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, there were 7 lanes of queue. Oh. And I didn't realise there were another 5 or 6 lanes of spillover queue on the other side of the hall as well, which I didn't see till I got out of the queue. So it was absolutely insane. And I think it's worth saying right at the top of the episode, before I really get into a bit of comment about the event itself, as you alluded to there, Rob, Jodie's not a personal favourite doctor of mine. I've got pros and cons about her era. A lot of our friends have got pros and cons about the era and you know, legitimate discussions about how good she was at the Doctor and what we think of her stories. Not the crazy sort of, you know, fringe stuff.
No.
But it was therefore really positive to see just how much demand there was to see Jodie in Melbourne. And I've got to say, compared to Christopher Eccleston a couple of years ago, it did skew younger and it did skew more female. And there were obviously a generation of fans for whom Jodie is a really, really big deal. Lots of people came dressed up as Jodie. And so it was really lovely to see that every doctor is somebody's favourite and every doctor's got a really passionate group of fans. And that extends to Jodie as well. And for all the sort of middle-aged people who grew up with the classic era like us, who sort of said, oh, Jodie's just sort of one of those new doctors, there were absolutely people that I think came to the show with Jodie, and that love was really, really evident. So that was a really cool thing just to see in between me being cynical about a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I mean, pulling back the curtain a bit on our own podcast, the cold take we did on Jodie Whittaker is the most popular download on our feed in 8 years plus of doing this. So
yes,
there is a big interest in Jodie Whittaker out there.
There really, really is. I think that it's important that we don't forget that just because we're cynical old classic era fans.
Absolutely. So that half an hour ticks by. Jodie appears. I guess you can see her in the distance. She's starting to sign. What happens then, Dave?
So, yeah, look, I'll talk about the queue again in a moment, but got to the front of the queue, Jodie's there, and very, very friendly, all smiles. And it's, again, that contrast at these big events where she's got to do several hundred autographs in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And so it's that balance between I want to smile and make everybody feel like they've got their moment, and I need to do this in about 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And so it was really good. She balanced that really well. She looked at my time frame book, which long-term listeners will know has got now seven doctors and probably another 20 companions or something in there.
Nice.
And she looked and said, "Well, you've got a lot." I said, "Look, that represents 30 years of effort." And she said, "Oh, well, I better not ruin it then." And gave me a smile. And, you know, she's mastered the art of sort of doing this little chit-chat while she's doing her autograph and all the rest of it, and then it's sort of, yeah, move out of the way, the next one's on. So look, it was 20-25 seconds, but she did everything to make it feel like a really warm and friendly 25 seconds.
Yeah, and there wouldn't be people, I assume, saying, "Can I just get a selfie?" and running behind the desk. None of that.
No, so let's sort of talk about all of that, because this obviously was one of those big corporate conventions that you and I don't particularly like.
No.
That, you know, they're not the Sirens of Audio getting a small group, or not a small group, but a good-sized group of fans in a church hall, so to speak, and you get a lot of face time with the guest, and you get a lot of time at the autographs, and Katie Manning or Sophie Aldred can stop and speak to everybody who wants a photo. It's not that sort of event. It's an event where you pay a lot of money to get a very popular actress who's in a lot of demand to come to Australia for a weekend, and basically they're milking a lot of money from it.
Yeah, that's the real difference, isn't it? It's the caliber of the actor in question that is the difference. I mean, at a smaller event, you know, you're talking about people who might not have acted in 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
Yes.
Versus someone who's very much in demand, as you say, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, I've accepted that this is the only way we're going to see new series people, at least for the next little while yeah. they are still at the peak of their professions, and so you do pay money. Jodie was doing photographs before she did her autograph, so that started at 10. I didn't get a photograph, but I could see the queue for the photographs, and that was insanely long. And also I could see the flash of the photograph coming up from the above the booth next to the autograph queue. And so I was actually counting as I was just standing in this queue for an hour, and I reckon it averaged 18 seconds
really?
Between flashes. So I don't know quite what it would have been like, but it would have been literally you come up, you stand next to Jodie, a photo's taken, you move along. But there were people in the queue talking who got a photograph. They said, "You know what? I'm very okay with actresses and actors not wanting to be touched and everything, but so I'm always very careful." But she came up, she put her arm around me, she was really friendly. And so obviously, again, she was doing everything she could to make that 18 seconds of your photo being taken feel like it was a really special moment for you. So yeah, look, good on her. But I did sort of surrender this time to the corporate event and booked a mid-price tier sort of super pass.
Right.
So they had the options. They had the sort of the, you know, mortgage your house, sell your child Gallifrey pass, which meant that you got to be first in the line for both the Jodie panel, autograph and photo, and it came with those things all included. I opted for just the sort of the general skip the line pass, which didn't come with anything. So it's a bolt-on autographs and the like on top of it. But as I only wanted an autograph from Jodie, it worked out to be quite reasonable value for money, and it did mean that I was able to sort of be fairly close to the front of the line, fairly close to the front of the Q&A session. And so I only spent an hour, a bit over, in the queue for the autograph, whereas my friend Mark, who occasionally interacts with us on social media as Chook, he did a full 2 hours, 5 minutes in the queue.
Yeah. I used to get VIP passes to Supernova. This is going back a decade ago or more. And it really does save a lot of time. I think they're very worthwhile. If you're really into the guest, you know, or guests, plural, over the weekend, I think these kinds of passes are just invaluable, really.
Yeah, certainly compared to my Eccleston experience where, as I discussed, I spent an hour in the queue and then another 50 minutes watching people with VIP passes of one sort of another to sort of skip the line ahead of me.
Yeah.
I definitely wasn't sitting there going, "Oh my God, you know, what if Jodie doesn't stay for past an hour? What if I miss out?" So it was a much less stressful sort of experience. It did save me an hour in the queue. What was interesting, though, is that they had formalized things a bit more since last time. So they came along with a notepad and put a sticky label on whatever you wanted signed with your name and everything, so that there wasn't that whole sort of, you know, what's your name, how do you spell it? So that was interesting. And they also had a system this time where for every 5 VIP passes that went through, they put one normal ticket holder through as well, so that the normal ticket line was at least moving a little bit. And it still was a much longer process, but that was that sense of, okay, we're moving a little bit. There was somebody behind me in the queue who did literally say, can I speak to the manager about this? I have paid a lot of money for a skip the line pass. Why are these people going ahead of me? And they said, well, no, it's one in every 5 just to make sure they can move as well. And he said, no, I want to speak to the manager about this. This is not acceptable.
Wow.
So, there's a bit of fan entitlement for you, but there you go.
Yeah, there's always a Karen, or the male equivalent of a Karen, in every crowd.
Absolutely. But you look, there were hundreds of people there. There are hundreds of people lining up for Jody. It is always expensive. You know, it's $20 for parking. Mark and I had a quick 20 minutes to grab lunch, and we thought, oh, we'll go get one of those pizzas. And then we saw, you know, the small pizzas, $20. And it's like,
ooh, yeah.
No, we won't be doing that.
Yeah.
As usual, lots of fans running around in all sorts of costumes. This time I did note, Rob, because I know you're a fan, and I quite enjoyed it as well. There were a number of people in One Piece costumes this time, dressed up as Monkey Luffy, whatever his name is.
Monkey D. Luffy.
That's the one.
And that's the anime One Piece people. He doesn't mean One Piece swimsuits.
Yes, that's right. All the live action adaptation of the animes, which is also taken off. But yeah, look, lots of Jodies as well. And, you know, as always, there were Mandalorians walking around and that sort of thing. We'll speak about the other guest I saw afterwards, but we then had the Jodie Whittaker panel.
Well, how did it go?
Look, it went very well. Again, a symptom of these events, and maybe I've been spoiled by the Science of Audio events where, you know, the guest is on stage for 2.5-3 hours. By the time they've got everybody into the hall for Jodie, and by the time she's had to leave because she has to get to her next autographing session, there was maybe 40, maybe 45 minutes of Jodie actually on stage. And by the time the complete spanner that was emceeing her event had done his little bit of stand-up and introduction and made all his gags, God, it was probably another 5 minutes taken off that.
There's always one.
This guy was just a complete fool. But anyway, so look, unfortunately, there was maybe only about 40 minutes of actual Jodie on stage, which is a shame. But they got through a few questions, and she was really friendly, really enthusiastic. The questions were very high level, which I think is just a reflection of the sort of event it is. And it's not like a bunch of fans meeting Wendy Padbury, where we've, you know, had 40 years to think of, you know, very minute questions about her and her career. It's very sort of high-level stuff. But to work through, she did talk a lot about creating the character of the 13th Doctor and how much that the designing of the costume really fed into that, and how much she worked with the costume designer. And in her words, every stitch of that costume meant something and was a very deliberate decision, and that helped her to find her character. But also she spoke about the difficulty in coming into a role and being the 13th Doctor and wanting to do something new and different. So it wouldn't be, oh, that's a copy of this, or that's been done before, that she really sort of steered away from that. And what Chibnall encouraged her to do was be a lot more like herself. And so that nervous energy, that sort of fidgety nature of her Doctor, she said, really came from the way that she was on set. And she was like, no, give us more of that. Don't give us this sort of staid performance. Give us more of that nervous energy. Like, that's the sort of thing that we want to see. And how she sort of brought that in. And it did remind me of that, you know, famous John Pertwee anecdote about, well, just play John Pertwee. Who's that? It did feel very like that.
It's interesting, though, Dave, because when people see her on chat shows, especially people who aren't enamored with her, shall we say, they often comment, oh my God, she's fabulous on this chat show. She is so cool. I love her. Why isn't her Doctor like this?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you'd expect, you know, a chat show is a performance.
Yeah, true.
And so I think this is the sort of the Jodie between takes, just being completely herself, is the energy that she felt she brought to the role.
That's interesting.
Yeah, she was asked who her favourite classic Doctor was, and she did say that, you know, she wasn't a particular Doctor Who fan before she got the role. She hadn't watched all of the show, but she did enjoy Sylvester McCoy, and she did remember him from her childhood, so she did sort of nominate him.
Mm-hmm.
When she got questions about her favourite episode or a favourite moment, she came back to The Woman Who Fell to Earth and just talked about what it was like giving that first performance, what it was like on day two on the set, giving the big hero speech to Tim Shaw, what it was like coming through the train roof and just establishing that character and just sort of feeling as though she'd got it and she was there and she was really doing it meant a lot to her, and it was something she was really proud of. So that's an episode that really, really stood out for her.
Mm-hmm. As you're talking about that, I was just thinking of some of those visuals in my head and also thinking back to our cold take on her era. And it really is an era we can look back on now that has a start and a finish, and you can watch it without any pressure of it being new Doctor Who, etc., etc. We've talked about this a million times. And it does feel like something now, something a bit more substantial than it was when we were watching it live, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think that we do look back at eras once we can see the totality of them and appreciate them a lot more for what they are. And I think that she spoke a lot about that process for her of just like coming into the role very new, not quite sure what to do, finding the role, carrying it through. But she also said that she felt very free because of the nature of the Doctor's character to make decisions and say, well, okay, normally my Doctor would do this, but today I'm going to do something a bit different or a bit weirder or a bit wackier, just to be a bit different and to mix it up or to respond to things a bit differently. And she felt that the character of the Doctor gave her that latitude, which was very interesting to see.
Yeah, awesome stuff.
Very clear that she's very close to Mandip Gill. She said something which I've never heard a Doctor that had multiple companions before say, where she said, I'm not meant to have favourite companions, but Mandip was my favourite companion. She was there at the start, she was there at the end, and it was just wonderful to work with her. And I thought, wow, I can't imagine Tom saying that about, you know, picking one or anything, but that was just really honest. And I think it, you know, nobody took that as like, oh, why do you hate Graham? You know, everyone just took it as that sort of sign of just that relationship between those two actresses.
Yeah, she's got that out clause there of saying she was there at the start, she was there at the end, because no other companion was.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if you do think, well, Graham was pretty bloody good, you'd still think, well, yeah, I guess he wasn't there for that final series, you know. So I get what she means.
Yes, absolutely. Interesting comment she made. Somebody asked her, were there any scenes that you felt very differently when you saw it in post compared to when you're actually performing it? And she said, yes, there were many, many scenes where they'll take a different take or they'll take a different edit, and it sort of felt really different to what I was doing. But she said particularly the regeneration scene, which was quite heavily re-edited, and apparently Tag Your It was not the final line of the speech. It was only in the edit that they made that the final line. And she said that it was a wonderful decision and that she thinks it's a wonderful final line, but it wasn't the final line she performed, and she didn't know it until she saw it.
Well, that's interesting. So did she say, tag, you're it, and then go on with some other guff after that?
Apparently, yes.
Huh. Very interesting. Well, it's all in the edit. It is in podcasting, so I guess it is in TV as well.
Yeah, and look, the other Doctor Who notable thing that I've noted down here is somebody did ask her about if she had any sort of thoughts on the fact that a lot of people in the autistic community have really latched on to her Doctor. And she sort of said, look, I think it's important that Doctor Who is something that is accessible for everybody, and that she made a point of trying to do that. Although I don't think she sort of felt as though, all right, I'm going to be the Doctor that autistic people are going to relate to. And I think I got the feeling that's been a bit of a post facto thing from Chibnall. She did say it was something that she was very proud of and very aware of, and that she wanted the Doctor to be an incredibly welcoming sort of Doctor, an incredibly safe Doctor for all sorts of different people. So that was an interesting answer there. Beyond that, she did get quite a few questions. I was surprised at how many questions she got about other work, and a lot of it was stuff that I haven't seen. But apparently she did do something where she played an Australian, and a lot of Australian fans have seen that. I haven't even heard of it before, but
yes.
She did talk a bit about that.
Yes, I've seen advertisements for that on the ABC, oh, some months ago now.
Right,
and
right.
I thought, oh, there's Jodie. Oh, she's got very, very short hair now. You know, it was definitely her. But I never watched the program in question, no.
Yeah, no, neither have I. I didn't know it existed because I don't watch free-to-air TV, so I don't see those ads. So, yeah, no, that's something I'll have to check out on. But she did speak about having to try and master the Australian accent, and somebody said, how did you do it? And she said, I just did a lot of takes, and they picked the one that worked.
Very good.
So, yeah, look, it wasn't a lot, and it wasn't particularly deep, but that's the nature of these events. But I did definitely, you know, get that sense from her that She genuinely wanted to entertain. She was very friendly. She had a smile the whole time. There was a quite awkward opening where the Spanner MC was sort of trying to do a whole gag sort of thing where he's like, "So, Jodie, when you were cast, it was a bit controversial because, you know, the BBC likes to make very safe decisions." And she's looked at him and gone, "Well, being a woman is not an unsafe thing." And she goes, No. I'm doing this bit where I'm going, and they made the really controversial, she's like, "What are you saying?" The controversial decision to cast the shortest ever Doctor. You know, I think Sylvester McCoy will be really upset by that. And she's gone, "Actually, I'm taller than Sylvester McCoy." So it was kind of this really awkward start to it as well. And that sort of set the tone for his moderation, which was a shame.
Like I say, there's always one at these events who goes on like that. I don't know why they don't get someone just a bit more clued in who's personable, but just gets to the point and just informs the audience and keeps the chat going. You know, there's always someone who thinks they're a star and they're not.
No, this guy definitely falls into that category. And look, I'm with you. The best moderator is like the best umpire. You don't notice they're there, and you don't remember the things that the moderator said to prompt a good story. You just remember the good story that was prompted from their comment.
Exactly.
And that wasn't the case here. But she herself was really friendly, both in the autographs and in the panel, to a room of hundreds and hundreds of fans.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I know you want to talk about the event in general, but there was a second guest you were there to see, a second guest who I think is pretty popular amongst our listenership.
Well, we've definitely done hot takes on his work, and that is Tamira Morrison. I don't know if I've pronounced that right. Mm-hmm. But he, of course, played Jango Fett in Attack of the Clones and revisionist Boba Fett in other stuff. No, he was good enough to actually mention Jeremy Bullock and say that he was following in his footsteps. So that was quite nice to see.
I thought you were going to say he was good enough to mention the Doctor Who show's review of Attack of the Clones.
No. He acknowledged Jeremy Bullock. Look, Tamira was really quite entertaining. He's obviously quite a large personality. He came out with his, now you've got the right name for this stick, Rob.
The Gaffy Stick.
The Gaffy Stick. He came out with the Gaffy Stick and showed off some movements. And then he just opened up with a bit of a talk about how this is based on a Fijian fighting stick that he saw, and that itself is very similar to a Maori fighting stick that he's trained with, and how he encouraged the director, you know, "I can do this sort of stuff, so let's use a whole lot more of it," and how he regretted that after sort of 2 days of filming in the desert doing all the actions. He's like, "Maybe I shouldn't have opened my mouth." But he was really energetic, really excited to be there, spoke with real passion about the role, spoke with a lot of passion, as you'd expect, about his Maori roots and the influences of that. A lot of questions about his role in Once More Warriors, which was really interesting to hear him talk about. He did a couple of songs. He did a haka, really sort of gave a big performance, which was quite entertaining to see. And in this case, the moderator did just sort of let him get on with what he wanted to do and just threw audience questions at him and let him do that. So that was really, really quite fun. He was asked about Book of Boba Fett 2. He said he'd love to do it. He hasn't heard anything. He has definitely heard that there is a movie coming and he would be very keen to be in that. And he did say that John Favreau sent him a bottle of wine for Christmas, and in his mind he's like, "Oh, that's good. He hasn't forgotten me. Maybe I'm going to get another call." But that was the other guest that I was able to see the panel for, and yeah, he was really entertaining.
Yeah, Book of Boba Fett was a bit disastrous. I'm not sure they're going to touch that, but when they make these Mandalorian universe-inspired things like the movie, I think he's a shoo-in for that, you know, at least as some sort of cameo, at least.
I would have thought so. I think that as much as there's a lot of differing views on the series Book of Boba Fett, I think a lot of people like Boba Fett the character. I think a lot of people like him as an actor and what he's done. He's obviously, you know, properly enthusiastic about the role. So that was really positive to see, and we'll see what comes of it. But he describes himself as being a really happy-go-lucky guy, and that's just evident on stage.
I have these visions in my head, you know, they're surely going to have a big Mandalorian sort of battle in that film, and, you know, if they say, "And we've called in Boba Fett," and Boba Fett comes in on his jetpack, and the audience will just go nuts. And if he's just there firing rockets and fighting people, that'll be great. It's when you put him in a series, episode after episode, and he's, you know, saving the local street kids from stealing water and things. It's like, oh no, this isn't Boba Fett.
Well, as someone was discussing with me in the queue afterwards, if he does come back and they're going to do a big sort of finale to those whole set of storylines, is there the final confrontation between Luke Skywalker and Boba Fett.
Interesting. There could be.
There could be.
Mm.
They're the sort of conversations you only get in queues at conventions.
Brilliant. Now, the event overall, Dave, your thoughts?
Look, it's not my preferred form of a convention or event.
Right.
I think that they are very faceless. And I was listening to a conversation in the queue while I was waiting where somebody said, you know what, last time I came to these, I spent my whole time in queues waiting for autographs. I didn't get to see a single panel. And I thought, look, that's a decision everybody makes and every fan's themselves. But I just worry if we're really going down that American path of you go to a convention just to queue up and get your autographs and that's about it. And you know, you don't get to see any panels. You only get to see a panel if you're at the front of the queue or you've got the VIP pass. And it's very, very mercenary. They have got to running them a bit smoother in the last couple. And this is certainly the smoothest run that I've seen. But again, how much of that is because I just paid more money for it to run more smoothly for me?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to judge. But you know, I have given in. Like, congratulations, Supernova. You've won. I've paid the extra dollars so that I can have a smooth experience. I got that smooth experience. It made the day far easier and far less stressful. I spent far less time in queues than I otherwise would have. Do I resent that I had to? Maybe a little bit. Do I accept that that's just that sort of convention now? Yeah, I do. And then, you know, I look forward to the next Sirens of Audio event where there's a much smaller number of really dedicated people who can really spend the time to just love one person rather than thousands.
Yeah, I mean, there are events now in the UK and US where the majority of people are just signing all day and they're not doing talks and things. They might be doing photographs and things, but they're not doing talks. So they're sort of there all day, which I guess cuts the lines down a bit if they're there all day doing this. But that's a whole other thing. Sort of Supernova tries to straddle what old school stuff was with the presentations as well as the signings. But there is this genre that is happening in the UK and the US where people do just sign and you go along just to get autographs and not actually hear these people talk.
Yeah, I would have said that, you know, if I'd spent that amount of money and got to see Jodie for 30 seconds, that would not be worth it. At least I got to see her for 40 minutes and 30 seconds up on stage. But again, in a room with, you know, I mean, a couple of thousand people in that room comfortably.
Yeah.
It's not a very personal experience, but hey, I've now got to see and meet and get autographs from seven doctors. I'm glad I did. I would have regretted not going. So there it is. But yeah, the dollars have won. The corporates have won.
Well, on that bombshell, Dave, I know you've had a big day. you're probably looking for a bit of a rest.
Yes, no, absolutely. But yeah, it's always good just to do these, sort of get on the mic more or less straight after getting home and just put those raw thoughts and raw memories straight out there, share them with the listeners who wouldn't have been able to attend, particularly as most of you don't live in Melbourne. You know what? On the Doctor Who show, we just like to occasionally throw surprises on the feed, and this weekend has definitely been one of those.
Speaking of, there'll be a musical surprise coming in your ears in a moment.
Oh, okay, good. It's a surprise for me too, listeners, so we'll find out.
Yes, you've not heard this one.
Right, well, look, I need to go back to the last couple of chapters of Who Killed Kennedy, but we'll be back with a list makers in, is that a week?
A week, yes.
A week to the next list makers, 2 weeks to Revenge of the Sith, and then 3 weeks to the main show on Who Killed Kennedy. Wow.
It's a busy month.
But a good one. I like that. That's a good lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. All right then, Dave. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Speak soon.
See ya.
Bye. Dave's got a plan. Gonna meet a Doctor Who star. He's heading to Supernova. Gonna go real far. Jodie Whittaker's the one that finds her in a race. Gotta get that autograph, put it in a special place. Supernova.